The Final Fate of Jan Hammer. Buy the Steve's Video Store Actors.
In colonial days, as the United States of America was being built by brave and honest people, there were times when superstition ran rife and hate claimed the minds of our countrymen. In New England, the mere accusation of being a witch was enough to sentence a person to be tied to a stake and burned alive. This terrible form of colonial justice, with its unfair court proceedings, sent many an innocent woman to her fiery death.
And welcome to Steve's Video Store. Ah, don't you love the smell of burning Jan Hammer in the morning, Carl?
It's Jan Winter. Yes, I do.
Jan Winter. You know what it smells like?
Smells like victory.
Smells like victory. Every year, if you listen to our shows, when we commented on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, what's been our major bitch? Take it, Mr. Carl Kafer, musical extraordinaire.
our major bitch extraordinaire. Is that Jan Winter is an asshole. And there are people that he will never let into the Hall of Fame because he doesn't like them. And, of course, this interview that he had, I guess it was The Atlantic, He just buried himself, saying that women and black performers don't have the intelligence to be in the Hall of Fame and shit like that. He got buried.
And
it's about fucking time.
Yeah,
say
but
that again?
What's funny about, he said that women and black musicians are, in his opinion, not intelligent enough to be interviewed for his cup. Interview book.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice to see some asshole get buried, but it's rare to see an asshole truly bury himself with such a thorough and impressive job.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm impressed.
You know, how many times have we bitched over the airwaves about Jan Winter and him not letting certain people in? I know you, with you, it's like Thin Lizzy and a number of others.
Warren Zevon.
Yes,
Zevon. Your guy.
Well, which is Harry Nilsson. Harry Nilsson.
Yeah, Harry Nilsson.
Guess my
Dr.
fucking
Hook.
Toe.
No. Yeah, Jethro fucking Toe. Just so many deserving artists. And let's not get into the 80s metal band that deserve, because so many bands have taken influence from them.
Yeah, I'm. That's your deal, not mine.
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
I know because you know as much as I don't like Metallica, the first thing I'm going to say is they're
no, not Metallica. I'm talking about the new wave of British heavy metal that came out of the late 70s, early 80s that was inspired by the Kinks' anger and Thin Lizzy's guitar playing.
Okay, like who? Give me a couple people.
Like Judas Priest, Iron Maiden.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Hell, yeah. If you know how to read Iron Maiden's books, he was geek culture before geek culture was cool.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Agreed.
Fuck you to death, Jan Loser. Maybe we'll get some good picks into the Hall of Fame now that you've lost all influence.
You know,
and if you let him back in with the foreign influence, you ought to go to hell and die.
Let me tell you something. I know somebody who's laughing in his grave and just jumping up and down. You know who that is?
Who?
Hunter S. Thompson. They couldn't fucking stand each other. And you know how much I think of Hunter.
Yeah. Well, if you remember, an almost famous, even, what's his name, the director, Cameron Crowe did not have not nice things to say about Jan Winter.
No, he didn't.
Or
you know,
we can quote my favorite, Lester Bangs, that Swedish cocksucker. He called him that Swedish cocksucker.
Yep. So,
how the hell do you go from an underground god to a fucking joke?
Well, just look at his life. That's the perfect thing. I mean, he was when the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame started, man, he was a god. It was a wonderful thing. I was there the second year it was up, because that was the year that Frank Zappa died, and they put him directly in. And I took a bunch of kids to there, and we stayed the whole day. And, you know, I said, what a wonderful thing, and what a wonderful thing Jan Winter has done. And then over the years, man, just showed how prejudice he was against specific musical artists and musical styles.
And do you know why Frank Zappa wouldn't let himself be inducted while he was alive?
Well, he wasn't. He hadn't met the criteria yet.
No,
but
he had. Remember, Freak Out came out in 68. He met the criteria, but he wanted all of the Mothers and his band. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they said, no, we're only going to put the first one in. Then he said, well, suck my dick, I'm not going to come there.
Yeah. You know, he, as tough as he was with his bandmates, and trust me, he was also very, very loyal to them, too.
Yeah, there's only a few that ended up hating him, and I never understood why, and he never did clarify why him and Jimmy Carr Black hated each other.
Funny thing is, they certainly had difficulties, but Jimmy Carr Black came back late in his career and Zappa's to be on albums. They were still, you know, I won't say close, but they were
Cordial,
that's the word. They were cordial.
And here's another one for Carl. Michael Gambon, which most of us would know from, most of us non-art film freaks would know from the Harry Potter films, is the darker Dumbledore from the later books, which I think Richard Harrison, as good as he is, he couldn't have handled the darker, you know, the darker twists and turns. And the geeks would know him the most from The Cook, the Thief, which he played the thief, and The Cook, the Thief, the Wife, and His Lover.
Yeah. But he was also, he was all over the place. Gosford Park. Give me a moment.
Yeah.
Oh, not my favorite by any means, but of all films, but a good film. Good film.
A crappy film and a crappy mystery.
You know, he was in The King's Speech.
Another crappy Oscar bait film.
You know. But he did a lot of that. You know, he was in Hail Caesar. Now, I tell you, one of the films I love him in is The Life Aquatic. He played Seamus O'Leary, who was the guy that had the money that was backing Bill Murray.
Oh, and speaking of the new Ronald Dahl adaption from that guy is up on Netflix this week.
That's what I heard. And he was also in The Fantastic Mr. Fox. He was, you know a film he was in that I forgot? Amazing Grace. The film about, that's the one about the person who wrote the lyrics to Amazing Grace. He's in that. Let's see, what else? Gosford Park.
I see Tumbleweed.
He was,
drifting across.
He was Baltus in Sleeping Hollow, too. Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah. But still, when you said that about Amazing Grace and described what it is, I seen tumbleweeds just go across the studio of acting.
Well, I went to see that in the theater, okay? You know, forgive me, I'm into religion. He was in Squanto, A Warrior's Tale. He was in the Browning version.
If you like religion, why didn't you like The Leech? But boch.
Because that was a rough fucking film. He also did the second season of The Storyteller, the Greek Myths one. Not as good as the original first season, but nonetheless.
That's because they... that was the season they took Jim Henson's balls and said, give me those. Bop, thank you.
And the other thing, the thing that really got him going was the original BBC production of The Singing Detective.
Ooh. And no, this is not the very crappy horror adaptation with Robert Downey Jr.
No, this is the BBC. This is the rough one.
And it's rough in a good way, not rough as in, God, let me paw my eyes out.
Yeah. And, of course, lots and lots of TV.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? There's another movie he was in. First movie I ever saw him in, and you saw it too. The Beast Must Die.
Ooh, I love that one.
Yep.
The best crossover werewolf film and an Agatha Christie film ever made. Or should I put the only film that's a cross between a werewolf.
And Agatha Christie.
With a little bit of The Most Dangerous Game sprinkled in.
Yep.
Isn't it like the only movie that Kelvin Lockhart has the lead?
No, he's got one more. It's called The Banker.
Oh, okay.
Those were the only two.
But yeah,
there you go.
I mean,
that's Michael Gambon for you.
Yeah. Rest in peace, sir. And
absolutely.
Now on to the main meat and the reason why Carl is so giddy tonight. We've done many. I mean, it's a, most of the problem with Halloween mixes is 99.9% of the good songs, well, even the bad songs, were released as, and Carl's about to give you a definition, 45 single one-shots.
Mm-hmm.
Carl, tell the people what a 45 single one-shot is.
Well, basically what you've got, okay, so an album is 33 and a third. That has a number of songs on it, usually five or six on each side. A single is two sides, an A side and a B side. And the A side is the one that they push on Top 40 radio. And so you would get these novelty songs for Halloween, like Monster Mash and that sort of thing on Garpax. And they would, that's what they would push. Maybe they might put out an album, but that would not sell nearly as well as the 45. So they focus specifically on the 45. And this is basically in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
You know, once you get in the 70s, then you get into albums, basically.
Or you got one-shot bands like The Poets, who I think had
right.
one album, period. But God dang.
The Poets had an album. I'd have to check. And if they
yeah,
did,
I'll
it was
look
a couple
it up.
Less
they
than years
had
later.
An album.
Okay.
They had one album. And they didn't want to deal with the studio twat waffle shit. And so they said, bye-bye.
Yep.
And if
and
you're
so
the way you bring up The Poets, listen to Dead. That is one of the best Halloween songs ever. And with a beat that'll make you move your ass. That beat will make you shake your butt, even if you ain't got no butt. You'll find butt you didn't have.
This is true. This is true. So what are we focusing on? Why don't you tell the audience what we're doing today?
Albums. What I mean is full albums, and the whole song has to be dealt with creepy. First, we're going to deal with music, and then we're going to get into spoken word. Sadly, most of the spoken word stuff is from the 60s. I don't know why it fell out of favor in the 70s, because there was nothing better than listen to a good spooky story during a thunderstorm or just late at night.
Agreed.
And there was a renaissance in the late 70s and 80s when the public radio stations, stuff that would use any free broadcasting they could, would get all of these PD things. There was the shadow, the spider. Come on, Carl,
lights
you can name
out.
A couple.
Lights out?
Lights out, everyone.
Oh, Arch Hobler. Nothing more need to be said.
Oh, God. Well, yeah. Explain who Arch Obler was radio-wise.
Well, Arch Obler was basically Alfred Hitchcock before Alfred Hitchcock when it came to radio. He was the first one to really do scary stories on radio. And then once you hit the 50s, then he started doing films. And he did some odd films what's the one about the TV?
Twonky!
Yes, the Twonky, yes.
In Seven.
No, actually, it's not Seven. It's Five. It's Five. Not Seven, it's Five. But
well, I added two more.
He also had an
well,
early
actually,
TV show in the 50s.
Yeah. It's actually six if you count the monster, which I do.
Yeah, but it's the title of it is called Five. But really, really, you know, I mean, listening to these things, and the other thing, too, is when we get into that, you know, anyone that was attached to horror films, and I'm talking like Boris Karloff and John Carradine and these people, they would do these spoken words, and we'll get into that later, but there's a lot of that
yeah.
out there.
And what comedian was the first one to really name drop Arch Obler in his routines?
That I do not know. So tell me.
Bill Cosby.
Oh, Cosby. Okay.
He talked about when he was a kid, and I thought he was full of crap once I tell you what he's listening to, but surprise! Was the chicken heart that ate Cleveland.
Yes.
It wasn't Detroit.
No. There's a couple of takeoffs on that. The eggplant that ate Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, comic versions of it. But yeah, the chicken heart. That's what it was called, the chicken heart.
And what it is about a town that gets attacked by this giant Godzilla-sized chicken heart. And all you can hear mostly throughout the whole show is just bum, 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 bum. Mm-hmm. And then it got louder and louder and louder and louder and louder and boom. But
you know, one other
take off. Go ahead.
Okay, but one other takeoff on that I just want to mention, and Thomas Pynchon did a novel called Gravity's Rainbow, and in Gravity's Rainbow he has a small section of it about a giant adenoid that attacks London, and it's directly
yeah.
from Obler.
I honestly thought, Carl, that Bill Cosby was just making it all up until my local consignment store had a whole bunch of cassettes, and I looked, and it was Lights Out. It was called the Haunted Mansion of something I forget. But the B-side said, The Chicken Heart That Ate Cleveland. I'm like, what? Well, but my first musical pick is one that I haven't talked to Carl about, and it's the Alan Parsons Project. And can you guess the album's title, Carl?
Tales of Imagination. I forget the exact.
Stories
but,
of Edgar Allan Poe.
Allan Poe. And it's a great fucking album. Great
it's
album.
A whole album set to music of Edgar Allan Poe's poems and short stories.
And it's wonderful. It's a wonderful
yeah.
album.
It definitely wears its heart on its sleeve.
Yep.
Very great album, and it's kind of obscure nowadays, isn't it?
I think the reason that it's obscure is because, you know, that's from the 70s. You know, and that's 60 years ago, basically.
Yeah, but you still get lots of people find like a million copies of another album, which I'm going to bring this up as my second just because it fits right here, and that's War of the Worlds by Wick Wakeman.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you can find like a million copies of that on YouTube.
Yeah.
And that is a rock opera version of the War of the Worlds with Orson Welles, or is it Christopher Lee that does the narration?
Orson Welles does.
Yeah, and it's one of Miss Love's favorites, isn't it, Carl?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And what's your first two picks, Carl?
What, you want me to do two? Well, let
yeah,
me start
I just
with
did
one,
two.
Okay? Because
okay,
we did yesterday we did a commentary watch on Back to School, and in that movie there's a wonderful concert sequence with Oingo Boingo, and they're doing Dead Man's Party from the same album, and this is an album that also has No One Lives Forever, Weird Science, Same Man I Was Before, and it's very, very much focused on weirdness and
nothing
horror.
Nothing Bad Ever Happens to Me.
Yeah, yep, there's that too. So it's a great, it's a great album.
That may sound nice, but Nothing Bad Ever Happens to Me is one of the darkest fucking songs you can hear.
Well, agreed. Agreed. And basically, the next one I'm going to mention is my favorite album from them, but basically any album by this group, and that's The Cramps. I fucking love The Cramps.
Oh, God, yeah.
Lux and Poison Ivy, man, they, you know, the idea is she was hitchhiking. He picked her up. Then they found out they were in the same class at Santa Monica State University of California, and they hooked up, and they had a love of early, you know, 50s horror movies and that sort of thing, and they came up with The Cramps, and oh my fucking God, they invented psychobilly. It's
psychobilly or hellbilly.
Mm-hmm. I always like psychobilly better than hellbilly. Billy.
Yeah, but I like Hellbilly Shock. But
yeah, but
the album that I picked from them is Live Dead Girls. Which one did you pick, Carl?
Songs the Lord Taught Us. This is the one that I picked.
Yeah. Isn't that the one with the human fly?
Yep. Absolutely.
Oh, that one has one of the raunchiest bass lined intros ever.
And you know, that's the thing about Poison Ivy. One of the things I love about this group is, you know who her guitar hero was? It was Link Wray. You know?
Yeah.
Link Wray, man. And just an unbelievable album. But as I said, any album. Any
by
album.
The Cramps, yeah. I mean, look, you just have to look at 80s horror films. Return of the Living Dead, off the one I picked, The Surfing Dead.
Yeah.
Near Dark, Fever.
Yep. It has I Was a Teenage Werewolf, Sunglasses After Dark,
yeah.
Mystery Plane, Zombie Dance, so many great songs.
Are you sure this is Zombie Stomp?
No, it's Zombie Dance. Zombie Stomp comes,
okay.
Comes before.
Okay.
I think, or comes after. No, comes after, actually.
But yeah, The Cramps is a great...
Oh, and they do a cover of Strip 9, too, by the Sonics. They do a cover of Strip 9 by the Sonics.
Ooh, I love that fucking song.
Yeah, exactly.
And I definitely love when the Sonics version is used in Hardcore Henry.
Yep.
But, yeah. And then we got one that Carl pulled up, and that would be the early Danzig and the Miss. Their first album has, like, the Halloween anthem.
Yeah.
I Remember Halloween.
Mm-hmm. Now, that album is Walk Among Us, by the way.
Yeah. And the only film that blatantly uses a movie title in its for its inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
What movie is that that they use? It was called Fanatic in the UK.
That's not this album. Oh, unless you're talking about Astro Zombies.
Yeah, they use Astro Zombies, Die, Die, My Darling.
Yeah, that's in a later album. But this has Vampira, I Turned Into a Martian, Night of the Living Dead, of course, Devil's Warhouse, Astro Zombies, and Brain Eaters.
Those are all movie titles of some real driving crud.
Oh, yeah.
What was the Brain Eaters an unofficial adaption of that got them sued by the author?
Mm-hmm. And of course, let's not forget who was behind the Misfits. We forget this. You know who was the main driving force? What?
Glenn Danzig.
There you go. Exactly.
If you Republican cocksucker only, me and you would have gone round and round and round and round.
Yeah. You got to give them credit, man.
The early years of the Misfits are just, any of the albums are great for Halloween.
Yes, agreed.
But I asked you, Carl, answer me, what book was the Brain Eaters an unofficial adaption of that got it sued by the author? Because they ripped it off without giving him a damn cent for rights to his book.
The Puppet Masters. The Puppet Masters.
By?
Heinlein. Robert Heinlein.
Except that he didn't write them as Fuzzy Slippers.
No, he didn't. No,
the Brain Eaters is not good. Go watch the 90s Puppet Masters.
Mm-hmm.
And my third pick is, I already picked the third one. Boop, Carl.
Okay. I'm going to do something just a little different because I'm going to say Nina Hagen, the Nuns Sex Monk Rock. Okay? It's not exactly horror.
Wait a second, Carl.
Okay.
Warning, pretentious bullshit about to be spouted. If you have any honest human musical taste, turn off your headphones or turn the radio down for the next 5 minutes. Thank you. Go on, Carl.
Yeah, you and I disagree on Nina. But the thing
is, I love her stuff.
Her vocals, everything about this album, even though it's not, quote, horror, sounds like it's from a horror movie soundtrack.
Yeah, you could put that with Grace Jones, too.
Yeah, Grace Jones would be another one like this. But my favorites on the album are Empty World, Born in Z-Zax, Cosma, Shiva, and UFO. And boy, if you don't know Nina, this is a woman who could be an opera singer, but it would only be modern opera, and it would be opera that you would run from the stage screaming because it's just insane. And of course, probably the best thing she's known for is a German cover of White Punks on Dope called TV Glotze, which is just insane. You can see that on YouTube, but anything by her. Okay, I'm done. You can wake up now.
whoa. And the next one definitely goes into get any of his albums. And that will be the one, the only, Mr. If You Have Goals, Then You Have a Wonderful Life, Roky fucking Erickson.
Also, the 13th Street Elevators was his band. And either Roky alone or the 13th Street Elevators, I don't care what you get. Perfect fucking Halloween.
Yeah, sadly, Dear Roky was like Sid Barrett, as in he dabbled, he had one too many pharmaceutical experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended very up much frying his brain.
Mm-hmm.
But once he fried his brain, he put out some of the best horror theme music you have ever heard.
Yep. And since we're going, like, buy anything from an artist, I'm going to mention someone, too.
Wait, I ain't finished. But ones to try to listen to the most to really see if you like them are You Have Ghosts, of course, the hardest to learn song in the history of karaoke, I Walked with a Zombie.
Oh, yeah.
I walked with a zombie last night. That's basically about the whole song. I walked with a zombie. I walked with a zombie last night.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say the other great karaoke song is Tequila. Okay. That's it.
Yeah. But, and of course, if you've watched Return of the Living Dead, the song that most people love the most off soundtrack was Burn the Plains by Roky Erickson. And if you love that kind of atmosphere and mood, you'll love Roky. He just drenched his music post-pharmaceutical indulgences with so much atmosphere.
You know, and he's another guy that loved his 50s horror movies and stuff, and really like brought that stuff out into his music. I love Roky.
You could smell the stale, almost closed drive-in popcorn and the leftover hot dogs in almost every song that he sung.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
And I mean that in a loving way. Just get any of Roky's albums and you're sure to do good. If he said, if you have Ghost, I say, if you have Roke, you have a wonderful life. Damn right. Now, what was yours on the just get anyone?
Well, basically, how can you not mention Screaming Jay Hawkins?
Oh, God. Now we're moving into a different territory. That is Nolan's musical horror. Nolan's musical horror, I mean, as long as they've been music in New Orleans, they've been horror and just violence attached to it. Like, you've heard of the Axeman Rag, haven't you, Carl?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know the story behind it?
Oh, I know it was a serial killer. That I know.
Yeah.
Not much
more. A serial killer that busted in about 5 to 10 people's houses and just butchered everyone in the house. And then he said, he sent this song to a radio station, or I don't know, it was an anonymous letter. It says, play this at exactly 9 o'clock if you don't want to get chopped up by the axe. And you would just hear this all the way down through the New Orleans streets for about a month. And he stopped and he vanished.
Yeah.
Now, tell us why Screamin' Jay Hawkins.
Well, why? Let's see. I put a spell on you. And, like, everything else. I mean, he started out as a straight singer. And then he came out and did I Put a Spell on You. And he was the guy from Cleveland, DJ. You know, the famous DJ from Cleveland that started rock and roll.
Oh, Alan Freed.
Alan Freed went up to him and said, you know, I'll give you $200 if you come out of a coffin and do the song. And he says, listen, I don't want to do that because any black man that gets in a coffin doesn't come out here in the South. Doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But he was cajoled into it, and he found that that was an absolute wonderful way of being a shaman. And you know, we're going to talk about some other people.
Carl, may I take the time to replace being a showman with what he said, that the real, what he really said?
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Scaring white folks.
Yeah. But that was the whole thing. And so, you know, he was the first one. You talk about Alice Cooper, you talk about Kiss, you talk about any of these bands that use theatricality to scare people. It's Screamin' Jay Hawkins, period.
Yeah. It's like I've always said, there have been two sides. I tried to explain to a friend. There's the jazz band side, which would play for you in the 20s, and you would dance, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the Screamin' Jay Hawkins side, which would take you around and put its arm around his shoulder, take you in the dark and cut your fucking throat.
Yeah. Yep.
Feast of the Mau Mau, Little Demon.
Oh, God.
The long version of I Put a Spell on You, the one that got banned from radios for being obscene.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what was obscene about it, Carl?
He was moaning and groaning all throughout that. Ooh, he thought it was sex. And let's not forget the Constipation Blues, by the way. Anyway.
That's a song about real pain. But, yeah, get some Screamin' Jay Hawkins.
Yep. And he even did some. He did a cover of Tom Waits' song "Whistling Past the Graveyard." He did so much. And love him dearly. That man is a true genius. Seriously.
Yeah. And now we're going to move on to the '90s for one album before we probably go back to Nolan's with Carl, as we deal with a album that's like a goth horror classic of the 90s, and that is The Darker Than Dark. Do you remember in Spinal Tap, Carl, and everyone who's seen it, they talk about that album being blacker than black?
Yep.
Well, Nick Cave's Murder Ballads is blacker than black.
That was also on my list. And
yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
And by the way, do you know that there's a connection between Nick Cave and Screamin' Jay Hawkins? You know what it is?
What?
They're both in Jim Jarmusch films.
Poor bastards. Yeah, seriously, poor bastards.
Murder Ballads is unbelievable.
God, yeah. I mean, only he would say, Even though the bombs are dropping and your flesh is melting off your bones, just remember that death is not the end.
Yep.
It's one of the darkest songs ever that sung like a happy
tavern while drinking beer, basically.
Well, no, like a happy church song, you know. Not the end. Just remember that death is not the end. And then he sings, on that same album, he sings the dirtiest version of a Staggered Lee I've ever heard.
Yeah, that is the unexpurgated Staggered Lee.
I've heard the unexpurgated Staggered Lee. It's not as purely filthy as the Nick Cave version.
I know from the 50s that's unexpurgated is Lloyd Price. Lloyd Price did the version.
Yeah.
And of course.
But would you hear Lloyd Price say that he would crawl across five good pussies just to get the one young boy's asshole?
Oh, yeah. That's Nick Cave.
And it also had Nick Cave's only top 40 hit in America on it.
Which was surprising.
Which is Where the Wild Roses Grow with Kylie Minogue.
Yep.
It starts out as two choruses of the most beautiful song you ever heard. And then it gets...
dark.
Yeah.
It turned out
there is this killer that there really was, I forget where he was, but he would take girls and take them off and deflower them and then bashing their heads in and planting roses in his teeth. And when he led the cops there, there were about 20 or 30 rose bushes planted.
That came out in 1996, by the way. It was recorded between 93 and 95. And
yeah.
Boy. Yeah.
What do you think about it the first time that you heard it?
Unfucking real. Unfucking real. You know, the other one I listened to just the other day was O'Malley's Bar.
Oh, God, yeah. 21 minutes of just pure violence.
Actually, on the release, it's like 15 minutes. But there's a live version that goes like 20, 21.
Yeah. And that's one you have to hear to disbelieve. That whole album is just good. But if you play that at your Halloween party, you might get some looks.
Yeah.
But you will have those one or two that look at you and go, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Are we going to go back down to Nolens with your next pick, Carl? Or are we
going we're not going to go back to Nolens, but we're going to go to someone who was influenced very strongly by Screamin' Jay Hawkins.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be The Crazy World of Arthur Brown. Fire!
Yeah.
Can I give you
fire?
Fire.
Yeah. That one is a beautiful story in itself. How when he showed up on the Ed Sullivan Show, he had people in the audience running out in terror and pissing their pants.
Yeah.
As soon as he had to speak, he had his microphone turned up to 10 or 11, if you believe in Spinal Tapism.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went out, I am the God of hellfire!
And I bring you fire. By the way, do you know who produced that and who was behind him?
Who?
The Who? Townsend. Peter Townsend.
Oh, cool.
Peter Townsend. And it was released on Track Records. He has two albums, The Crazy World of Arthur Brown, then he came out with Arthur Brown's Kingdom Come Later. And there were three albums of Kingdom Come, only one of Crazy World. But this is a guy, you know,
who would chill on stage with a flame shooting out of his fucking head.
Yep.
On top of his hat.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And he's still out there touring. His latest album was Gypsy Voodoo in 2019. He's unbelievable. And almost any album, but the one I really recommend is Crazy World of Arthur Brown. Strange Lands is very good, too. But unbelievable, fantastic artist, and there's more to this story, but we'll get to that later. So that's Arthur Brown.
Next,
so it's up to you.
I want to go to. Well, if you sing the vinyl, you're gonna be paying a pretty penny for it.
Mm-hmm.
The originals.
Okay.
And this is really a super group that did with this crazy guy who just did two albums of some of the most ghoulish, weirdest, creepiest music you've ever heard.
I don't know where we're going.
Yeah. And God bless him for having such a name. And yes, he was a real lord, Carl. I looked it up.
Yeah, I know he was.
Yeah. Scream, he was not only a lord in England, he was a... What kind of lord was he, Carl?
He was a screaming lord.
Screaming lord. Your Majesty, screaming lord, Hutch.
Such.
My bad. But yeah, I mean, with songs like Murder in the Graveyard, Carl's favorite, Jack the Ripper.
Oh yeah, there's live there's a live version of that on YouTube. If you want, it's unfucking real. Seriously, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And by the way, I didn't have an album.
I'm a vampire. Mm-hmm. Or is it
I had an album of Screaming Lord Such in my collection, and that is now with my collection with John Shearer. He has all my albums that I gave to him. So he has that album.
Which one did you have, All Through the Night or the other one?
I had the other one.
Oh,
which was not
only...
as... No, it was basically Screaming Lord Such. There's not exactly a title on it, if I remember correctly.
Oh, okay.
It's been a while since I've known.
But yeah, why is such a novelty album done by a guy who was a member of British Parliament so musically fucking sound? Anyone who could tell me that, Carl? Do I?
I think you do. I think you do. So Screaming Lord Such was a very, very good friend of John Mayall. And so he basically came up with a guy by the name of Chaz McDevitt. And they came up with this idea of doing Jack the Ripper, but they needed this garage bout, this sound. And so basically, he hooked up with
a bunch of nobodies.
And let's see, who all did they bring in? Well, they brought in Eric Clapton. They brought in Jeff Beck, Ritchie Blackmore, Keith Moon, Noel Redding.
Yeah.
Let's see who. Pretty much so. All these guys went through such a band. You know, and basically some of them weren't recorded on the albums, but they played with them live. But, you know, if he needed a musician, he'd call up John Mayall and say, hey, I need somebody. Can you send someone over for a gig? And that's what would happen.
And don't forget, John Bonham was in, played with Screaming Lord Sutch, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I forgot that. Yes, he did.
Yeah. Moon had to go on a tour, so Bonham replaced him.
Yep.
I think this is back when Bonham was in the New Yardbirds.
Well, actually, no. We'll get to that momentarily.
Okay.
Oh, actually,
go
I
ahead.
Think it was new. Okay, because Bonham comes up a little later for me. Okay.
Yeah.
No, but you're right. It was the New Yardbirds, which, of course, all came from John Mayall. You know, John Mayall is the father of British blues, without a doubt. He's the father.
And if you know a certain movie from the early 70s, which is one of the best rock movies ever made, just hearing John Mayall's name will send you off into giggles like a little schoolgirl.
Yes. We were talking about that before the show.
Yeah. Look at you, Carl. You could have been playing good music, respectable music, with Mick Mayall and his Blues Bakers. But no. You had to play Zappa's comedy music.
You gotta love it. You gotta love it.
Yeah, but Screaming Lord Sutch is just, I don't know why. There's so many Who completists. There's so many Led Zeppelin completists. There's so many Jeff Beck completists. There's so many Eric Clapton completist, Screaming Lord Sutch's album should be out in the forefront.
Yeah.
But it's not. I looked into it while looking for sound for my Halloween mix last. On Spotify, look up KSDAD's Halloween Mix of Doom.
Nice.
But yeah, why do you think, Carl, that Lord Sutch's two albums with all of that power has really gone into obscurity?
Well, okay, so I don't consider it obscurity. I consider it he's so pigeonholed in Halloween that nobody mentions him unless it's Halloween. Seriously, because all his songs are, you know, murder songs and Jack the Ripper and monsters and stuff like that.
Yeah, but do you ever hear Eric Clapton completist talk about him? No.
No.
Do you ever hear Who completist? No.
Or Jack
That's
Beck
what I'm talking
though.
About. Yeah, the completist crowd. Those crazy.
Yeah.
That's a different level of insanity there when you get into record completists. That's why I'm glad that you fell in love with Frank Zappa, Carl.
Well, you know, talk about a completist. I'm certainly a completist on Zappa. No question.
No, you realize that mountain is too high, too big, and too expensive to climb all the freaking way.
Oh, no, I'm not going to do that, but I know the music. The music's more important to me than the album.
I'm talking about buying when I'm talking about completists. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, trust
Even
me, I had a really good Zappa collection. Don't kid yourself.
Oh, I know that, but you're not one of those that would buy, like, wax tracks that would fall off the truck. Wink, wink.
No. No, I wouldn't. No, you're actually right about that.
And falling off the truck is something that we could do a whole show on, but let's get move on. What's your next pick, Carl?
Okay, so we're talking about Arthur Brown. Now we're going to talk about an album that I totally love. Okay, and it's an album that came out right after these people broke from Arthur Brown to start their own band. Those people that broke, that were playing with Arthur Brown, was organist Vincent Crane and drummer Carl Palmer. And they came out with an album. The band's name is Atomic Rooster, and the album's name is Death Walks Behind You. Now, I have given you this to listen to. You know, it is, to me, my favorite all-time Halloween song. It's like 11 minutes long, but the whole album is nothing but, you know, creepy as fuck and good progressive rock and roll. And Vincent Crane, then once Atomic Rooster only came out with three albums. Once they broke up, he went back to Arthur Brown, and they're still touring together. Yeah, in 2023.
Yeah, it's sad that we had so many. I think Paul Simon cemented the term one-trick ponies.
Mm-hmm. But just to give you an idea of the songs on there, you've got Death Walks Behind You. You have Tomorrow Night, Devil's Answer. All off this album. Just unbelievable stuff. Give me a second here. Vug, Seven Streets, Sleeping
Vug?
For Years, which is a Vug, V-U-G. Sleeping
Vug
for
you.
Years, which is a, yeah, that's basically it. Sleeping for Years, which is a very, very twisted version of Rip Van Winkle. Gershotzer. If you don't know what Gershotzer is, it's a German word for a toilet.
The shitter! It should be der Scheiser.
Gershotzer. Or Schatzer.
Scheiser.
Actually.
Scheiser.
No. So anyway, that's Atomic Rooster, and it's wonderful stuff. It's good progressive rock. It's really outstanding. But Death Walks Behind You is the Halloween song of all time, as far as I'm concerned, number one. There you go.
But what about Ghostbusters?
No, not even close.
Or the Time Warp.
I like the Time Warp. I don't even like Ghostbusters, but no. No. We want things to scare people. And this scares people.
Only way the Rocky Horror Picture Show would scare someone if they're a homophobe.
Yeah.
And I don't mean the latter. And for me, I'm going back down to New Orleans. About a story concept album done by this guy whose entire thing has been dark, semi-satanic rock. And it was an album about this couple that goes to settle in this house down in New Orleans, but it's haunted by the ghost of a woman named Abigail. And that would be Abigail by King Diamond.
Okay. I was wondering if you were going to bring up King Diamond or not. You hadn't talked to me about
it. Yeah, yeah. Abigail,
but
the whole album, it's just a great creepy ghost story.
Oh, yeah. Agreed. Agreed. I'm not a huge fan of King Diamond, but I have heard cuts from that album, and it's pretty goddamn good.
Yeah, that is pretty much, even he considers that his masterpiece. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's one where he goes into horror without going into the satanic stuff that's usually his bread and butter.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at most Norwegian death metal bands that put on the makeup, they definitely take a lot of inspiration from the king himself.
Oh, yeah.
King Diamond and Merciful Fate. Pretty much, if you're looking for something creepy and you want something different, just get any of the Merciful Fate or King Diamond. But besides Abigail, you might want to test run them before you play them, because you might offend someone.
Mm-hmm.
It's like outside of a King, this is the close of my talking about King Diamond. Outside of a King Diamond, once he was walking to his limo, and this woman come up and said, "Your music offends my Christian sensibilities." And he just looked at her and went, "Good," and got in his limo and left.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, since we're into metal, I'm going to bring up my only metal album, or proto-metal album. And it is one
Can
of
I
the
tell
creepiest...
the intro to it before you say that?
Okay, but all I, before you do that, I will say this. I think it's the creepiest debut album ever from a very famous band. Now you can go.
And what happened was these three working class English fellows was going out one day, and they had a show to play about later that day, and they was like a Beatles, Rolling Stones, you know, the usual cover band shit.
Yep.
But then they were like, "Ooh, this is a scary movie. What's it called?" Beep, they say the title, and say, "Let's go see it. It might have a few scared birds there to jump in our laps." And they came out of this movie, their eyes widened. And the lead guitarist looked at the singer and said, "I want to make music feels like that movie."
Yep.
And what was that movie that they went to see on that day, Carl?
It was Mario Bava's Black Sabbath. Yep.
Yeah.
And it gave
Tommy
us the
Iommi,
album Black Sabbath. Yep.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath.
Yep. Just unbelievable. And scary album cover, too. That's one of the scariest fucking album covers I've ever seen.
Yeah. If I know
you
Black like Sabbath. Album covers so much, at one Christmas time... It's hard to find nowadays, but they put out a Funko Pop of the album cover, and the pop with it was that woman from the cover.
Nice.
But yeah,
you know,
it
I mean,
not
you
only
ha-
started...
You have the title song. You have the title song, Black Sabbath. You've got The Wizard. You've got Evil Woman. You've got Warning, which, by the way, was co-written by Ainsley Dunbar. But just a fucking great album. Great album.
Yeah. And do you remember that song that was hidden, or was it hidden on Children of the Grave? That had the hidden song
that's
their, at the
that's
end.
That's their next album. That's their next album.
Yeah, Children
that
of
was
the Paranoid. Grave.
Yeah, it's not on the first album. Not on the first
okay.
album. I think that's on
yeah.
Paranoid.
But yeah, that
which another
is
people, that's
not,
another one that would be perfect for Halloween too, is Paranoid.
The horror trifecta is Black Sabbath, Paranoid, and Children of the Grave.
Right. Yep.
And
okay.
Now you go, Carl. You have some serious ones slotted up. My mind's foggy for all of a sudden.
No. The next two I have are not serious. They're more for kids.
What I mean is you have them written down.
Yeah, I have them written down. So you want me to go? Okay, so what we think about family-friendly Halloween songs. One of the big ones that come by is Bobby Pickett's Monster Mash. And there's nothing wrong with that album or that song or that album if you find it on Garpacks. It's a wonderful album. But I thought I would pick something else along the same lines that isn't as well-known. Now, people that know me know how much I love Spike Jonze. Spike Jonze is basically the godfather of novelty music. Started in the late 30s, early 40s.
Don't underplay him.
I'm not underplaying him.
No, you are.
Not at all.
Spike Jonze made more money off musical patents.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
To play with this thing. He was the first one to create a scale cowbell line. You may think of me like, Steve, you're kind of stupid. But if you'd actually heard them from the deep bass to the little light ones, that was 5 to 10 years of research, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, he has many, many patents as far as cowbell stands. That I think the patents are now no longer around, but nonetheless, he was an excellent drummer. He was a drummer during the swing era in the 30s and 40s, and then basically came out with the Spike Jonze Deprecation Review, and he did all of these silly songs. Their Fuhrer's bass and all this stuff that was, you know, thumb your nose and that. But he has an album where he's making fun of hi-fi, which was a new thing in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And Spike Jonze does hi-fi, and the cover is all the monsters and witches and so on and so forth. The whole album is Halloween, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful. And he's silly, and the man was one of the great arrangers. He does a version of Night on Bald Mountain on this that is just hysterically funny, and was like, oh, my God, how can they play that? Seriously. The first time I ever listened to Spike Jonze, we had gotten a 78 player. And I took it, and there were some 78s there, and I ran across Spike Jonze Laughing Record. And I said, what the hell is this? And I put it on. Trombone, think of this. Trombone player playing Flight of the Bumblebee. And then all of a sudden he has an asthma attack and starts sneezing. And then everyone starts laughing. And that's the whole side. And it's just hysterical. But, you know, imagine playing the Flight of the Bumblebee on a fucking trombone. That ain't easy.
Yeah.
Trust me.
And did you know that he did a score for a Disney Merry Melodies cartoon?
Oh, yeah, I did know that.
Which one?
I can't remember which one, but I remember that
the Skeleton Dance.
Yep, that's it. That's it. Because Carl Stalling just looked at Leon Schlesinger and said, you don't want me for this. You want Spike Jonze. That's right.
Yeah,
yep.
And it went over Fletcher's head because he called it Spike Jonze, da-da-da, Skeleton Dance. Oh, what kind of xylophone do you want to use? What? We got a high-pitched timbre? We got a low-pitched timbre? We got... It was basically... It was basically someone discussing calculus with someone who was confused by third grade division.
if it wasn't for
dear sweet Spike Jonze, we wouldn't have the Alien soundtrack.
No. Absolutely not. And also one of the first people to bring in the theremin, too, into his music. He was unbelievable. He was unbelievable. He's a big hero of mine. But Spike Jonze Does Hi-Fi is a great album, particularly for kids and for family-friendly. And you definitely want to check that out.
And don't forget the great... soundtrack from the Haunted Mansion, the 50s version, if you can find it.
Yep, because that also is Spike Jonze. And, I mean, he does the Nutcracker Suite. He does all of this stuff. And it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And when we get to Christmas, we'll get into Spike, too, I'm sure.
Yeah. And... we're going to spin off your albums because it's about time for us to get into
I got one more to go into, but you have forgotten somebody.
Well, who?
Let me put it this way. Gree.
Oh, yeah, that was yours.
No, that's yours.
Well, what happened Dr. John... He would put on Dr. John shows with his that right place, wrong time, nothing from nothing leaves nothing, you know, pop songs. But then there was this weird album that come out with no idea of who wrote it. Right, Carl?
Well, it was him on the cover. You knew it was Dr. John if you knew what he looked like, yeah.
Yeah, but if you didn't, all you seen was this cover. It just said, The Night Tripper, Gree.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Carl, why does this fit Nolan's horror so much?
Well, it's all about witchcraft and all the ghost stories of that. Walking on Gilded Splinters is one of the scariest fucking things if you really listen to what it's talking about. But it's all about New Orleans magic and the graveyards and witches. And he does a version, it's not called Marie Laveau, but it's about Marie Laveau on the Gregory album. But yeah, you got to talk about Dr. John and Gregory. And I know you love that even more than I do. So that's why I wanted to give that to you.
Yeah, I love it. It's just so creepy. And the fact that he would do complete shows as the Night Tripper. The Night Tripper going to come to your house and kill you one of these nights. You'll never know. and you'll never see.
And of course, he also did a lot of theatricality in these particular concerts. He would come out in feathers and do incantations and things like that. Wonderful stuff. Wonderful stuff.
And if you've ever watched the Disney movie, what was it? Princess and the Frog?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
If you look at the bad guy, Dr. Lassiter, he's a cross between Screaming Jay Hawkins and Dr. John is the Night Tripper.
Yep. And, of course, Dr. John does the soundtrack to that, too. And some great fucking music on that movie. That's my favorite hand-drawn animation, of particularly the late ones of Disney. I just love that movie.
One of those where they got everything about that Nolan's creepiness right.
And there's a version of Evangeline in that movie that just will break your fucking heart.
And since we're right here at the spot, Miss LaVie Marie Laveau has probably been the most recorded about historical figure from Nolan's ever. Let's see. All the bands that me and Carl love from the mid-70s that came from that area sung about her. Redbone.
Dr. Hook.
Dr. Hook. Bobby Bear.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like if you're the Nolan's band and you didn't have a song about Marie Laveau in your repertoire, you'd be kicked out of New Orleans.
Yeah, seriously. Seriously. Wonderful stuff. Yep. And before we get to the spoken words, I got one more to go through. Unless you've got another one, I'll go.
No.
So all I'm going to do here is, this is an album by an artist. I'm not going to tell you the artist yet, but I'm going to give you the album's name. Tell me what you think of this. Riding a black unicorn down the side of an erupting volcano while drinking from a chalice filled with the laughter of small children. That is the name of the album.
Don't you remember what I said earlier?
Okay, that's exactly what I want you to say. Go for it.
That album title, that when you said it, rust just shot out of your mouth.
Yep. Absolutely. And this is an artist by the name of Aurelio Voltaire, or otherwise known as Voltaire. He's a Cuban-American. He's a guy that I just ran into basically recently because I got YouTube Music Premium. And he has basically engulfed the whole goth aesthetic. So all his songs are from a goth aesthetic. And he comes out in goth costuming and such. And it's all about death and how we're all going to die, and it's all depressing shit, and it's done very jauntily. The songs are sound like they could be children's songs almost, but not the fucking lyrics. But this is a guy you should check out.
Sort of like that one I mentioned earlier, "Death Is Not the End" from Nick Cave.
Right, exactly.
Da da da
exactly.
Da da da. Yeah. But yeah, those are some creepy albums. But yeah, now when I was looking up for albums for this, I found like a genre that I forgot about, and I should, because every Halloween when I was a wee little Steve from about when I was in grade school, the librarian every Halloween Eve or as close to Halloween as she could get before the weekend, you know, she would whip out an album with like scary stories. And yes, this is the inspiration for my these albums, which we're going to be talking about, are the true inspiration for my live read series that I do every year. Well, I try to do every year. I know I slacked off last year, but I've been sick. Sue me. No, sue Carl, because he ain't got shit. And he'll be like, yeah, sue me. You can take everything I got. Fuck you. Right, Carl?
Wrong, but that's okay.
You'd be like, nothing from nothing, get you nothing. I got to have something if you want to get paid, but you ain't getting paid. But yeah, Carl remembers more of the radio shows that they would play on public radio.
One of the great things about that is when I was in school for my master's in church music in Chicago, on Sunday nights, Stan Freberg had a show. And he would play all these old radio shows like The Phantom, Lights Out. And, man, I freaking loved it. So I always, you know, my roommate at the time would just look at me like, you're weird. But I was. And I was also like 30 years older than him at the point, or 20 at least. But yeah.
We're getting into a thing that I like to call, and I hope Carl likes the term, theater of the mind.
Yep. Yeah, and I remember going to the library when I was a kid. And it'd be near Halloween, and there'd be an album by, like, Vincent Price, Scary Stories, and stuff. And I love that stuff. And so we get it from the library.
Yeah. The one that I listened to today was called A Witch's Horn Book, filled with poems and stories read by head warlock Vincent Price.
Nice.
And that had like a beautiful witch woodcut cover. You know what I mean, that style.
I know exactly what you mean.
And Carl said, and Tracy said, it looked just like something that was from Where the Wild Things Are. That style.
Yep.
And it's creepy as hell. I could see why many schools would not stock it. Because half of it is just scary poems and stories like the Jabberwock and stuff. But the other half is him basically reading a witch's horn book on how to become a witch.
Yep.
And then there's the Alfred Hitchcock series for young children.
Mm-hmm. There's also Boris Karloff did a couple of them too.
Yeah,
I remember. And he would. They were stories. Basically, the one I remember is they were stories about the Universal monsters. You know, Frankenstein and the werewolf and all that.
I remember hearing one by Boris Karloff where he gets mad at the Frankenstein's monster for breaking the wall to go outside. Monster? Yeah. Why did you break down the wall? What do you mean you had to go outside? The door was right next to it.
Well, a lot of that was picked up by, you know, we were talking a little bit about Monster Mash. And Bobby Pickett,
Yeah. Definitely,
you know, that influenced Bobby Pickett in that song.
And
Mad Monster Party and all that stuff. But, you know, a lot of these spoken albums were basically for kids. You know, they were relatively family friendly. They were like the predecessor to Goosebumps, for example.
But
right?
They had some for, yeah. But they had some for adults.
Yeah.
you know, like one of the rarest ones I've seen, the cheapest vinyl was a vinyl, and if you get a vinyl record in crappy condition, it's $19 to $300 for a virgin. And what does a virgin mean, Carl? A complete virgin.
Well, basically a virgin means, you know, a woman who hasn't had sex. What the record version of that is mint. It's mint. It's not been played.
Mint.
If it's been played,
not
once,
been
it's mint
played
minus.
In plastic.
Yeah, that's a mint.
Yeah, that's
you
a
know,
holy
and I've heard it called a virgin too with the plastic.
Yeah, with the plastic,
you know,
it's called
sealed.
A virgin.
Mm-hmm.
Still sealed. But, and it is, Roddy McDowell reads the stories of H.P. Lovecraft.
Nice.
And the first side is split into two parts, but it's Roddy McDowell's reading H.P. Lovecraft's The Outsider.
Nice.
And the second side is him reading the... what's the one that Dan O'Bannon did that was based on there? And they used part of it for the Haunted Palace. Oh, the
Dagon.
Facts in the case of... No, the facts of the case...
Baltimore?
Yeah,
Baltimore.
M. Baltimore. Yeah. He didn't pick easy two stories, did he?
No, he didn't. He didn't.
And if you go to Vinegar Syndrome, and I think they're sold out by now, there's a reading of, it's a cassette, called like, right? But it's a cassette of the reading of The Color Out of Space, by, guess who?
By the author himself. By the author.
No, by Richard Stanley.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. You know who else did something like that?
Who?
Here's a name that you might know or might not. Tully Cooperberg. You know who Tully Cooperberg is?
No.
Have you heard of the Fugs?
Fug, yeah.
Okay, so he was part of the Fugs. He did a version of what was it? Illustrated Man. He did a version of The Illustrated Man, some of the stories from The Illustrated Man by Bradley Cooperberg.
Yeah, nice. I think I've seen the album.
They
wanted like 20 from it for it.
Yeah, that's because that one is the one that was just released not too long ago. Yeah, they had...
No, it was
an
older version of it.
Well, then, if it was $20, you should have bought it. Because they did a remake. Because I'm following them now, and they're coming out with a new album. And they're talking about all their re-releases, and they did all re-releases of these spoken words by both Sanders and Cooperberg. And Tully's, it's actually, 2 days ago was his 100th birthday. He's long gone by now, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Vincent Price did a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a night with Edgar Allan Poe.
Mm-hmm.
When
there
I say few, Carl, I mean about 20 to 30.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It was a lot more than a few.
Well, that's what we consider a few down south. You know, I've seen a few of them.
Yeah, spoken word stuff didn't sell nearly as well. But they basically, a lot of spoken words were basically aimed at libraries.
Yeah.
Because libraries would keep those, like, and you'd use them for English classes and so on and so forth. And so that's where they were basically marketed toward the spoken word.
Yeah, no, there was this one by Orson Welles. I forget. It was just a whole bunch of short stories that he did that I'd usually try to borrow from the library of my grade school every Halloween while I went to that school once I heard it.
Mm-hmm. And there's another one that Price did one of Nathaniel Hawthorne too, and Ambrose Bierce. He did like a whole series.
Yeah. The Hawthorne was a tie-in to Twice Told Tales.
Right. Yep. In fact, I remember the cover for that one.
Didn't see a resurgence of the audio horror until the 70s. What happened is we would pick up college radio or public radio, which would use any cheap broadcast they could. And about that time, The Shadow, The Spider, The Laugh. Who was the guy that was just the laughing man?
Yeah, there was another name
he would start each show telling how he was murdered, and now he
It's The Strike, I think.
The Strike, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and he would go from, like, town to town. You know, he would just be there to watch. And if you were a fan of the monster cereals and Honeycomb, each Halloween they would have, like, a Halloween album, which is either a live recording they recorded or something cool. Like, 1 year I got Orson Welles' version of The Hitchhiker.
Yeah, that's been, of course, adapted all over the place. That was written by a woman, by the way. Can't think of her name, but Twilight Zone did it. The 80s Twilight Zone did it. They even did a version of that for the show The Hitchhiker, which was on HBO in the, what, the 80s? 90s?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
then there's the one which we're going to close the show out with. And there was this thing called Halloween Horrors. They came out when I was a kid. And if you're looking at this on Blog Talk or on Spotify, and you can see the album artwork I picked, that's it. It's a story about a guy who has inherited a house in New Orleans, and he goes down there to visit it on Halloween night. And the other side is filled with sound effects, which was cool if you was running a haunted house or something.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So, Carl, what do you think is better? Just getting a whole collection of scary songs off of the net or looking up these whole albums like we've had to really look for and get a full experience from someone going one direction?
I think they're both valid, but you know, we're pushing the albums because, you know, you might know a song from an album, but if you don't know the whole album, you're missing out, particularly if they were put out in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and the early 80s, because
if they were a concept album.
Right, exactly.
explain to the younglings what a concept album was as an idea, Carl.
Well, basically, a concept album, it's sort of like a rock opera. It might be a rock opera, or it might be songs that are interconnected in some way to give you a feel. Perfect one that you mentioned earlier was the Alan Parsons Project, Tales of Imagination, Edgar Allan Poe.
Rick Wakerson's War of the World. A concept is an idea that's told through music and words on an album to tell one singular story.
Mm-hmm. Right, and the Kinks, which is my group, they did several concept albums.
Yeah.
By the way, you mentioned Rick Wakeman, War of the Worlds. I want to also mention my favorite version of War of the Worlds is Jeff Wright's, who's not as well known as the Wakeman version. But there were two albums that came out like a year, one after another, on the next year. And the first one was Wakeman, and the second one was Jeff Wright. Both good. I just like the Wright better.
Yeah. And to wrap it up, so we can have 14 listen to the greatness that is Halloween Horrors. Carl, what do you have coming up as the 31 days of Halloween start on Monday? What do you have coming up this weekend? Or is this another fallow season?
Okay, so we have a whole series of stuff that's happening.
What I'm asking is, what are you doing Saturday or Sunday?
Okay, Sunday we're just, TC's got a show on Golden Oldies. But we start, of course, Monday is October 1st. And one of the big things that's happening here in Metro New York City is that there is a film festival that's going to be coming up on the 18th through the 22nd. It's called Shaka Gogo. And on the 4th, which is Wednesday, we're going to have the head of that and filmmaker, Eric Eichelberger, coming in and talking about the festival. Not only that, this festival has special guests such as Lloyd Kaufman, and a number of people, including a mutual friend of ours, Scooter McRae. And we're going to have Scooter on. We're going to have, I'm hoping to get Lloyd Kaufman back on, but we're going to be, and we've got two filmmakers already that are going to come in, and we're going to talk about their films that are premiering at this festival. So a lot of what we're doing right now is getting ready for the festival and booking everybody. But we're also going to be doing commentary watches. I know a couple of the commentary watches we're doing is Pin. We're going to be doing Day of the Dead.
How the hell did you find a good print of Pin?
You know how I got a good print? They just put one up on fucking YouTube. It came up about a month ago, and I said, holy shit, we got to do Pin for October. I love that movie. Fucking love that movie.
Oh, God, yeah. The book's good, too.
Yeah. So we're going to be doing that. We're going to be doing of course, our playlist that we always do every year. And I know Doc has some things planned, and we're going to be focusing. We're going to be doing a lot, and it's going to be – I've been after that to get their shit together so that we can get this all planned. But right now, things are a little up in the air because I got to plan all this stuff with the Shaka Gogo, which we're basically going to be there – podcast promoter, just like you do with Knoxville. So that's turned out to be really well. And I got to thank Scooter for all.
what we got planned here is probably some stuff with Vicky. I need to get in touch with her. Bad Steven. Ow, ow, ow. We're going to be probably indulging ourselves on Criterion. With a view from the 90s horror list, you can join us if you're able. One we were going to save for November, but we're going to do the second part of this double feature in November. It's going to be like the longest distance between part one and part two of a double feature. We're going to be the only movie that mentions a certain monster with a book about a steam-powered dildo.
Yep. I know the movie you're talking about.
And we're going to watch the most mis-marketed film of the 90s. It's the only film I've ever seen that has what is that weird instrument that they use in it, Carl? Do 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 do.
I'm not sure what film
you're talking
about.
It sounds sort of like an accordion, but not.
I know. What the hell is that thing called? You blow into it.
It fits the oddness of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a couple more we're going to debate about doing, but we're definitely going to be doing a night of pre-code horror with Bela Lugosi. Really doesn't like cats, does he? And
no, he
cursing
doesn't.
German midgets. What that is, you'll have to work out when we get to it.
Cursing German midgets. I like that.
Yeah. And with that, good night. And yes, it's the ritual has only started. Good night, everybody. Here we go.
Thanks for having
story.
Me, Steven.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Here we
good
go.
Night to everyone.
Yeah. The story is 14 minutes and 28 seconds. Listen if you want, because it's a good one. And if you guys watch Rugrats during the 90s, the guy that did the voice of Hugh Pickles is the guy who does the main voice work on this. So here we go.
Oh, boy, what a night to be driving. And it's Halloween, too. Oh, it's creepy. Oh, man, what I'd give to be back at home, snug and warm. Wait a minute, what's that up ahead? Ah, gas station. Pardon me, is this the way to Elm Hall Plantation?
Yes, it is, but no one's there. I'd advise you to turn back. It's not safe in this weather.
Thanks. Like this anyway. Who would have thought a week ago I'd be here driving on a lonely, dark road looking for an old mansion? What can you do? Last week I received that letter informing me that I had inherited an antebellum mansion just 20 miles outside of Natchez, Mississippi. It was left to me by my great-grandmother who lived there all of her 90 years. Boy, that's a long time.
Let's see. The mansion was built, I think, in 1820. And according to the stories I've heard, it has a very mysterious and tragic history. I believe one of my ancestors, as a small child, fell to his death from a high window in the old place. It was very mysterious, as the story goes. As I recall, the window from which he fell was never closed following the accident. That's kind of weird. Anyway, the child's mother never recovered from the loss, nor did she ever leave the house again. Years later, she passed away, her mind that of a little girl, ever since the night of the accident. I've heard that she only walked at night, clad in a gossamer white gown, breathing the only word she ever said for the rest of her life. My baby. Have you seen my baby? Oh, I talk about creepy. Legend has it that on stormy nights like this, they don't get any stormier, a white ghost-like form glides down the long corridors of Elm Hall. And it's even been said that some have sworn to have heard a cold, whispering, childlike voice saying, "My baby, have you seen my baby?" Ah, that's silly. Things like that only happen in the movies. And yet, legend also has it that those who have heard the voice have died tragically within the next year. Yeah, it's funny how these stories get started and are passed down from generation to generation. Yet, the eldest son of each generation at Elm Hall has always died mysteriously before his 25th year. Wait a minute. I won't be 25 until next week. Hey, better be careful, old boy. Oh, boy, this storm looks like it'll never let up. And the lightning. Whew. Huh. I wonder what it was like in the old days. Plenty of servants, I bet. Horses, carriages, and those beautiful southern bells. Ah, yes. Riding off to war with Beauregard. My old Elm Hall was certainly a pride of the old South. I bet it's a wreck today. My luck. I seem to remember another story about the old place. What was that? Oh, yeah, something about one of the daughters who was exceptionally beautiful. In fact, wait a minute. I remember an old photograph I once saw of her. And she was beautiful, even in that old-timey picture. Let's see, I think it was during the Civil War. That's it. Her name was Elizabeth, and she fell in love with a Yankee lieutenant. When her father found out, he went into a wild rage and told her she couldn't see the young lieutenant again. For weeks, she just stayed in her room. And then one day, news came. Her lieutenant had been killed in the war. That afternoon, she rode her favorite horse. Oh, wow, what was his name? Dancer. That's right, Dancer. She rode Dancer down to the Mississippi, and her horse returned home to Elm Hall that night, riderless. As I remember the story, about a week later, some young boys fishing on a sandbar saw her float by. Her body was returned to Elm Hall, and she was buried in the family cemetery on the grounds of the plantation. They say that on summer evenings, when it's deathly still, some people can hear a rush of wind like a rider passing by. And the Spanish moss hanging from the old tree in front parts like someone has just passed through. Oh, boy, that's creepy. Some say it's Elizabeth looking for her lover. And yet, others say it's her favorite horse, Dancer, looking for her. For every day, for the rest of his life, her horse would walk riderless to the Mississippi and wait patiently until nightfall for Elizabeth to return. And then he would walk back slowly in his grief to Elm Hall. Wait a minute, there's something up ahead. That's it, yeah. That's the old place. That's Elm Hall. Well, don't just sit in the car, Stephen. Go in and have a look around.
No.
That window upstairs. It's open. And the curtain is flapping wildly. Look at that. There seems to be a light on up there. No. Come on, there's no light on up there. Stephen, you're imagining things. Boy, it's still creepy.
Huh? I hope the front door is open. Good. It's not locked. Glad I brought this flashlight. Hope it doesn't conk out on me. Oh, wow. What a beautiful place. It is kind of eerie, though. This must be the living room. Wait a minute. No. It's the front parlor. That's what they called it. Look at those drapes. Oh. Oh, great. All that dust. I'll never get it out of my nose. Wait a minute. Look at that marble fireplace. It must be worth a fortune. What's that? This seems to be a portrait over the fireplace. It's Elizabeth. It has to be Elizabeth, the girl who lost her lover in the Civil War. Oh, boy, is she beautiful. It's almost like going back in time. Wait a minute, there's a pipe organ over there. That's got to be worth a fortune. And look at that, another portrait. Let's see, it looks like a Confederate general. I wonder who he is. Oh, my. Holy cow. His eyes moved. No, they couldn't have. They didn't move. They couldn't have moved. I could have sworn his eyes moved. His eyes looked real. All right, stop. Stephen, get a hold of yourself, boy. Now, come on. It's only a picture. The eyes didn't move, even though it looked like they did. All right, let's go in the hallway. Come on. Oh, darn. There goes the flashlight. What a time to go out. What's that? Is that the wind? No, it's footsteps. Oh, no. Oh, no, don't let this be happening to me. It's just my imagination. Oh, no, they're coming nearer. They're coming nearer. Oh, my heart is pounding. Stop. I gotta stop my heart from pounding, because they're gonna hear me. Stop. Oh, I can't. They're going past me. They must have seen me. They must know I'm here. I can't see anything. It's so dark. Down at the end of the hall. Wait a minute. It's somebody. It's somebody coming down here. It looks like a woman. I think she's wearing a white gown. She's coming this way. She's looking right at me. But wait a minute. She's looking right at me, but she doesn't even see me. She just floated right through the wall. It's like a dream. That's it. It's a dream. It's a dream. It's just a dream, Stephen. Oh, my heart's about to explode. Good Lord, what's that? Oh, it's right here. It just missed me. It feels like a coffin. No, it can't be a coffin. Oh, don't let it be a coffin. Wait a minute. I think it's a grandfather's clock. Please let it be a grandfather's clock, please. What's that? Oh, no. Not bats. Bats. I can't stand bats. Get away. Get away from me. They're in my hair. Get. I can't take this any longer. I'm getting out of here while I still can. Where's the front door? It's this way. No, wait a minute. I think it's this way. Oh, wait a minute. Wait, stop. Stop. You got to think straight now. Now, stop. Where are you? You took a left? You took a right? Get me out of here. Get me out of here. Wait, it's the door. It's the door. It won't open. It's got to open. Open up. Door, please open. Please, door, open. I'm trapped. Oh, thank heavens. It opened. Wait, what's that? My horse. I'm getting out of here before I go mad. Oh, no. The car won't start. Darn it. Start. Wait. Stop for a second. It'll start. Just turn the key too hard, that's all. Just turn it easy and... Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Corbin. Thank you. I'll never go near that place again. That's it. I've got to unload that place. I don't care what I get for it. I've got to unload it. I'll take anything. Is this the right road? Oh, it's got to be. I hope I'm heading towards town. I must be getting near that town by now. Yeah, there's the gas station. Oh, good.
Y'all went up to the old place after all, huh?
Oh, yeah. Look, could you tell me where I can spend the night? A hotel, a motel?
Hotel, now, let's see. The Jeb Stuart Hotel is a right nice place, and that's just down the street away.
Yeah, I saw that place when I came into town. Look, is there any place else?
No. That is the only place in town. But I'll tell you, it's the finest hotel we have in these parts. I know, because I own it.
Oh, boy. One other thing. Is there a real estate firm here in town?
Yeah, well, now you all be talking about the Dixon Company.
Dixon Company?
Yeah, huh? And it's
the only place in town. Yeah, I figured as much.
And I own that, too.
Good night, everybody.